If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Atlantic Coast Mortgage, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 643-114.
WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for being with us this afternoon, this warm and lovely Saturday afternoon, I should add. It's getting a little bit cloudy out there, but it's still warm and lovely. So enjoy it while you can, my friends. Enjoy it while you can. All right, we've got lots to do today on the Wintrust Business Lunch. We're going to be talking about Airbnb, and there's a lot of stuff going on about that in Chicago right now. A lot of conversations to be had, a lot of regulations being proposed. So we're going to be talking about that. We're going to be talking about sports, but not in the way that you think we're going to be talking about sports, not in the way they do in a little bit later this afternoon on The Game from 3 to 5, from 3 to 7. But instead, what we're going to be talking about is the idea of brand ambassadors, how a lot of former sports players then have a different role with teams, after they leave the player role. So we're going to talk about that and all kinds of other good stuff here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. But right now, I want to talk about a story that is a little bit of a weird one, and it seems like it's kind of a difficult story to follow, to tell you the truth. But it is this story about how Hulk Hogan is suing Gawker Media, and there's a lot of interesting players involved in this story. And every time we look up, it gets even weirder. And Ryan Mack is a writer at Forbes who has been following this and has been writing about this, and joins us now by phone. Hi, Ryan. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for joining us. So, talk us through this, because this is just such a strange story, and it really just it keeps playing out weirder and weirder. And Peter Thiel, who is this very interesting character who is a venture capitalist and has popped up many times on Gawker, he has gotten involved in this, and it looks like now that he is funding Hulk Hogan's legal battle against Gawker. So catch us up to speed on all that is going on here.
You mentioned the word weird earlier, and I think that's if you could boil it down to one word, I think that would be it. It's a couple months ago, Gawker won a kind of landmark verdict against, or sorry, Hulk Hogan won a landmark verdict against Gawker in this whole case, $140 million verdict. What wasn't clear at that time was that Peter Thiel had been funding the legal team for Hulk Hogan against Gawker, and we broke that story earlier this week. And that's raised a number of different questions and a lot of discussion here, I guess, across the country.
Right, because what initially came up when as we start to put the pieces together here is that there's kind of for the last few years been this narrative running that perhaps Gawker tried to out Peter Thiel. Tried to out him as gay in about, I think, 2007 or 8 or so, before he was really being openly, before he was out himself, right? So it seems like right away people kind of started saying, well, is he getting revenge against Gawker for trying to out him? And I mean, this is really starting to play out like a soap opera here in legal battles.
Yes. Yes, you're right there. 2007, Gawker.com publishes a piece on Peter Thiel, basically outing him. Gawker will argue that, well, he was already pretty open in the Valley community, Silicon Valley community, with his sexuality. Thiel argues the opposite. But that piece was very definitive in outing him. And in his interview, he gave an interview with the New York Times following the publication of our story. He didn't indicate that specific story as his motivation for going against Gawker, but it was alluded to. And Thiel was saying that, well, other people have had their reputations damaged by Gawker, or had some things published by Gawker that weren't great for their personal lives. So he was doing this for a lot of other people as well, which is an interesting thought.
It is really interesting. And, Peter Thiel also, we should note, was an early investor in Facebook. So here's someone who invested, a fairly modest amount when we're talking about Silicon Valley numbers with a very large return to it. So he's got the money to do these kind of things. So I think if you're talking about revenge from a billionaire, you know, it can take many forms if someone's got the money to do it. But it seems like it's hard to root for anybody in this. You know, there's such interesting players in this story that it seems very difficult to kind of identify who's the white knight in all this story, really, as it's all kind of coming out. I mean, Peter Thiel has been such an interesting character. He's been a big right. Trump supporter. He said some really controversial things. He's, you know, done plenty of great things, right. But he's done some really, really controversial things too. So when you figure in, you know, Hulk Hogan, who's had his share of scandals in the news, especially the last couple of years, you factor in Peter Thiel, Gawker, and all these pieces to it, it starts to get a little bit murky about exactly who the public should be rooting for.
It's quite the cast of characters, and I'm not advocating for rooting for anyone, or finding a white knight here, but yes, it is quite the cast of characters, and Peter Thiel is a really interesting guy. I mean, this is a guy who's built a reputation in Silicon Valley for being a contrarian. You mentioned the Trump support; that's not a common view here in Silicon mm-hmm. Valley. This is a guy who's also paid teenagers over the last couple of years to skip college and pursue their entrepreneurial adventures. That was a pretty, I guess, aggressive tactic for promoting the idea that colleges are essentially worthless. That's what he said in the past.
And he's also called ValleyWag, which is a now defunct publication, but that covered Silicon Valley, things that were going on in Silicon Valley. He compared them to a terrorist organization. I mean, he really is a very, very, a contrarian. That's the best word for him, really.
Well, he doesn't mince his words. I mean, no. that comparison came, I think it was a 2009 interview with online tech blog. But yeah, he compared ValleyWag and Gawker to essentially Al Qaeda.
Yeah.
That was the quote, and that quote's been resurfaced again now as you see him kind of admitting to funding these lawsuits against Gawker.
And it's really unclear to me exactly how this Silicon Valley contrarian has even crossed paths at all with Hulk Hogan, which I think kind of fuels the idea that this is really about revenge against Gawker, because I wouldn't imagine these two people would have otherwise ever crossed paths necessarily.
I don't even know if they've actually, that's a bit unclear. So I don't even know if they've actually communicated. I don't know what Peter Thiel's involvement in the actual lawsuit is, besides giving the money. The natural connection here, I believe, is this law firm in Los Angeles, who's one of his partners is Charles Harder, who's one of the lead attorneys on the Hogan side of things. Mm-hmm. But it's unclear of the connection there right now.
Well, it is
besides the money,
right? Besides money. Well, as we were saying just a bit ago before the show started with the previous show with Kathy and Judy, we were saying, you know what? Follow the money, get your answers. That's usually the way it is, and usually the way to solve the case. So, thanks so much for being with us, everybody. Head over to Forbes and see this and other things written by Ryan Mack, writer at Forbes. So we will let you keep us up to date as all of this keeps unfolding. Thanks so much for joining us today, Ryan.
Thanks for having me.
All right, my friends, we're going to take a little break. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about Airbnb, all kinds of other fun stuff here on the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for being with us this lovely Saturday afternoon. Thanks for spending your time with us and tuning in. So, my friends, still plenty to get to here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. We're going to be talking about Airbnb a little bit later in the program and all the conversation spinning around that in Chicago, because there's lots and lots of it going on right now. But right now, I want to talk about this idea of brand ambassadors. Joining us right now is Danny Ecker, who is a sports business reporter at Cranes. Welcome to the program, Danny. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So, you know, this is a really interesting topic, because it really used to be that if you were a sports player, after you retired from an active player role, either you went to coaching or broadcast or some combination of the two. But it seems like this kind of third option is starting to open up more and more so, especially as we, you know, are in such a social media age and such a technology-driven world where media is essentially in the hands of all of us, really. Talk to me a bit about this idea of people stepping into a brand ambassador role after they leave a sports player role.
Right. Well, so, you know, this has been kind of a long-standing practice of former players, you know, maintaining public ties with the teams that made them famous. I mean, that's really not anything terribly new. But what we're starting to see more of recently is some of these former players that are signing formal marketing deals with their old teams, and the teams are looking to leverage their popularity for both marketing purposes and community relations. And you know, it's kind of been a product of sports franchises looking to market themselves year round. You know, something they can't really do with their active players who are not there all year round. So you know, this is it's something where these teams are trying to kind of extend their brand into as many corners as they can, and these former players are able to do it. And the former players obviously are they're well paid for these roles, and it's a way for them to kind of stay, you know, keep their tie to the team, and some of them can even leverage the partnerships into their own endorsement deals too.
And what exactly does the brand ambassador do in this setting? Because I think when we think about brand ambassadors, we think about, you know, college campuses. We think about really young, cool, hip, usually tech-driven or fashion-driven, sometimes even alcohol brands, right, that young people kind of promote or going out or doing things like that. But how does that manifest in a player role? What are they doing? Because it seems like some of them are doing pretty innocuous-looking things like sitting courtside and hanging out at the games, but then some of them are doing a lot bigger things.
Sure. And it's, I mean, let's be honest, it's a pretty good gig to get paid handsomely to shake hands and, you know, just be on camera sometimes and take pictures of the community. But they do quite a bit. You know, some of the roles are different. You know, that we do see some of that kind of glad handing and, you know, doing some charity work and then appearing in the community on behalf of the team. I think what's the one of the more growing roles that they're playing is working with sponsors. You know, for example, the Chicago Blackhawks, you know, they actually have guys like Dennis Savard and Bobby Hall and Jamal Mayers. You know, they actually have a little sessions before each Blackhawks game where they do a little studying on some of the CEOs and some of the big business partners that are going to be in the suites and are going to be, you know, entertained that night. And they want to be able to talk to them and, you know, kind of make it their business to kind of entertain them in a way that's not just sort of them talking about, you know, these great stories. So, you know, they do a lot of sponsor work, and sponsors, you know, more and more are looking for not just, you know, signage and tickets and access to things like that, but experiences. And I think that a lot of these companies, when they have a partnership with these teams, they want to be able to leverage that with their clients. And what better way than to have, you know, some of these former greats to share the time with, and the teams are trying to serve that.
Definitely. I mean, it's what it's conjuring up for me is it seems like it's a sports equivalent, really, of like the conversation in publishing and media sites around native advertising and things like that. It seems like this it's that experiential, you know, brands are getting more sophisticated, consumers are more sophisticated. And so it's a natural evolution of what you would do with a sponsor, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, these guys really do serve an important role for them, especially considering that a lot of the current players, not only do they, you know, aren't maybe not there year-round, but, you know, they also are pretty busy. They have their own schedules in terms of, you know, performance on the court, on the ice, and on the field. But they also, you know, they have the levels of these salaries that players, that current players have are really so astronomical at this point that, you know, it's difficult to, you know, get all players to spend the time doing these things, making appearances on behalf of the team because, you know, they can spend their time and make some more money elsewhere if they choose.
Sure. But you know what? This also extends beyond former players. I'm calling to mind here. I'm thinking of Drake, who is kind of this official ambassador type of person for the Toronto Raptors NBA team. But it seems like what he does is just kind of hang out courtside, which doesn't seem like a very bad gig at all.
Right. And that's, you know, and we have a newer example of that here in Chicago, too, because the White Sox recently partnered with Chance the Rapper. He's the voice of their commercials this year. And, you know, and it was the exact same formula that they were looking for there. Here's a guy who has a lot of influence in the community all around Chicago with the kind of demographic that the White Sox are looking to appeal to. And what better way than to have a guy who's just got passion for the team in the first place you know, partner up with him and let him be kind of this ambassador and represent your brand.
It seems like there is perhaps an evolution here facing the idea of what a spokesperson is. It seems like maybe that's going to evolve as we do more of this brand ambassador kind of role in a new way.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, social media plays a huge role in this, too. I mean, there's a demand for content. You know, a lot of brands, that they really want to be able to both interact with customers and sort of have a face on social media, have a voice, have a personality. And, you know, when you have these influencers, and it's becoming a buzzword, you know, influencers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's really what these people are, these people who you know, have a lot of, you know, who are well-known, who often have, you know, significant social media followings or you know, people are interested in. And, you know, being able to use them as a platform to be the spokespeople, you know, it's just really useful for especially for sports teams.
Definitely. Danny Ecker, thanks so much for being with us today. Follow him on social media, but also Cranes Chicago, all the latest. He's writing all about sports and keeping us updated on all this kind of good stuff. So thanks for being with us today.
Thanks a lot.
All right, my friends, we're going to take a little break and get you to news. And we come back, we're going to be talking about Airbnb. Big conversation in Chicago right now here on 720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for being with us today and spending part of your Saturday with us. We are most appreciative about that. My friends, if you have been following the news, which I know that you have, it is almost impossible that you have missed all the conversations lately about Airbnb, which is really, really interesting. I know I think that's an interesting thing. I've used an Airbnb before and had a really, really great experience each time. It's essentially, it's like a rental accommodation, like a hotel, like a short-term rental, but it's at someone's house. And so lots of people do that to make a little money on the side if they travel a lot. Lots of people like to use Airbnb when they travel because they get to have a more neighborhoody kind of I live in this city experience as opposed to staying in a tourist area in a hotel. But right now in Chicago, there's a lot to say about that. And there's a lot going on because, you know, the dreaded regulation conversation has started up quickly. So here to talk with us about that is the web editor at Chicago Magazine, Bettina Chang. Hi, welcome to the show.
Hi, Amy. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for joining us and spending part of your Saturday with us. Well, so talk us through the latest, because I have been following this story with great interest, but it seems that the Chicago conversation around Airbnb in particular is getting a bit heated just as we start talking about regulation and red tape and all this stuff and really making some decisions about who can use Airbnb or who can be a provider of an Airbnb and what buildings qualify. So catch us up with that a bit if you can.
Yeah, for sure. So about last week, there was a little bit of political wrangling happening because the mayor's Airbnb ordinance was, there were a few 11th hour changes, which made Airbnb, the company itself, sort of hop off board of the regulations that would be happening. So we're going to have to wait, you know, I passed the committee last week, but it's going to have to wait another month to be in front of the entire city council.
Well, it seems like, as you said, it kind of an 11th hour thing. It seemed like it was a conversation that was happening. It got a little heated and then it died down and then it just kind of popped back up again. So what do we expect next? What are the next couple of steps ahead in this road for both sides?
For sure. Well, you know, it's a little bit up in the air right now because the reason those 11th hour changes happened was because, you know, there was this long city council hearing where hundreds of people showed up either to support Airbnb or against Airbnb. And there were a few aldermen in some of the wealthier wards who came in to say, you know, our neighborhoods are being damaged by the usage of Airbnb. And there are definitely some neighbors who are saying Airbnb people coming into our neighborhoods have diminished our quality of life. So that was sort of the last second thing where there was pressure on the mayor to sort of clamp down on these so-called commercial Airbnbs where perhaps people were operating what would basically be considered a hotel, but using Airbnb as a way to avoid being licensed as a company and getting around a few zoning regulations.
I see. And how, when people are saying that it's diminishing, or neighbors anyway, are saying that having people coming and going in the neighborhood is diminishing their quality of life, what are they specifically referring to? Because I think a lot of the people that are actively using Airbnb. It certainly seems like that community conversation is it's an overwhelmingly positive and supportive one. So what specifically are they pointing to when they go there?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's four sides to this story, but the one specifically about the neighbors who don't like Airbnb is usually because people will rent out a house for a big party, like a bachelor party, for instance. And so in one of these nice, quiet residential neighborhoods, you'll have a bunch of people, you know, 10, 15 people getting drunk, maybe like being rowdy in areas where the neighbors just really aren't used to that kind of behavior. So there are definitely, it was a minority, but a very loud minority of people who came out to say, you know, we don't want this kind of rabble rousing in our neighborhood.
Right, right. Which is fair enough. No one necessarily wants that in their world. Fair enough. And as usual, it seems like one of those things where kind of a couple of bad apples are perhaps influencing some sweeping widespread changes. And so there was an Airbnb spokesman who even said, you shouldn't model an ordinance based off of what the fringes are doing. And I think that's a good example of that. Another interesting part of this story to me is that Airbnb has long not been particularly transparent about their data. And as this has unfolded here, it seems like that has made them change their tune a bit and be a lot more forthcoming and transparent with sharing their data and sharing exactly what the reality of Airbnb usage is here in Chicago, which I find interesting. What is your take on that?
Well, in my experience, they were not transparent because I came and asked them for certain numbers. So when I said earlier, Amy, that there's like four sides to the story, it's mm-hmm. because there's also beyond, you know, the hotel lobby and these neighbors who don't want crazy drunk people in their neighborhoods, there's also this other side, which is saying that having these commercial Airbnbs in their neighborhoods is taking rental units off the market, which basically means that all of us are, you know, might be paying more for rent, because instead of having, you know, renting your apartment out on Airbnb gets you a lot more money than renting it out month by month. Right, because you know, a rental for 1 month is very different from paying something day by day.
Sure.
So we're looking at, I mean, a possibility, and this is not proven because the data is not available to us, that there are enough Airbnbs out there in neighborhoods where affordability is a problem that it is bumping up the rent. So if you look at New York, for instance, where Airbnb is extremely popular, and as most people know, you know, there's a huge affordability problem there. In a neighborhood like Williamsburg, there was an analysis that showed rents are going up between $30 to $70 a month just because there are so many units that are posted as Airbnbs instead of monthly rentals.
So then as part of this conversation, as we think about regulations that might actually be more useful than punitive, is this really about length of stay? Is that really what would be kind of the essential point here?
It really depends on who you ask. So, I mean, this conversation is happening all across the world, and there are some cities that will regulate Airbnbs by the length of stay, so like the number of nights that are rented out per year. So some cities it's 60 nights, some cities it's 90. The ordinance, which was changed originally, was supposed that anyone who is renting over 90 nights would need to register their Airbnb as a business, but that was taken off at the last minute. And then some people are looking at, you know, if the amount of money that you make in your Airbnb is more than you would get then by renting it out monthly. So that's also an interesting way to look at it. But, you know, it's a complicated situation because we're looking at sort of the nitty gritty of housing policy at this point.
It is really, really interesting, and I think I feel like we've stumbled into this conversation on many topics, and this is but the latest one is that housing topic. You know, I think we kind of had similar conversations when rideshare first happened. When, you know, any of these, when a new technology emerges, it seems like there's always a voice of let's just embrace it and see let it be another dimension here. And then there's always a voice of let's make this go away. And I think historically we've never been able to just make something go away once it exists. You can't unring a bell, indeed.
Oh, for sure. And I mean, people love Airbnb, and you can understand why. I mean, it's convenient, but the problem is that, you know, it's complicated, and it has some it could have consequences that we don't yet understand just because the data is not available.
Right. And, you know, I recall a couple of years ago, there were conversations starting about who is liable for your safety there. There was a story that I followed with great interest about someone who was using a swing that was attached to a tree. And as an Airbnb user, he was staying in someone else's home, and the branch broke, and he died. And so who was ultimately responsible for that? And so I think that's another conversation, an entirely different dimension of the Airbnb conversation, is that around liability. And that, of course, is going to vary by state and municipality. But it indeed it is an interesting one. And I think it's a modern reality when we see consumer usage jumping out way ahead of what the law has thought through yet. So it seems like we keep stumbling into these kind of Wild West moments a little bit, as we see happening right now with like Uber and Lyft, right?
Yeah, definitely. And one thing that hasn't even really come up in Chicago yet is that there's a lawsuit brewing about racial discrimination in Airbnbs, because it is illegal to discriminate against somebody based on their race in housing matters. So if you post your apartment for rental, you can't say, no Black people here. But there is evidence, anecdotal evidence of racial discrimination happening pretty rampantly on Airbnb, which is sort of embodied by this Airbnb While Black hashtag of people sort of telling their stories of how they were unable to book a room with their profile picture as a Black person. And then once they changed their profile picture to not show that they're a Black person, that they were easily able to book a room. So, I mean, that's something that is happening. And I think there was a lawsuit filed somewhere on the East Coast about that recently, too.
That's really interesting. Just today on TechCrunch, there's a really interesting piece that kind of fits into this. And there's a new startup service called Overnight. And it's sort of the idea of Airbnb plus a hotel now, like a hotel on demand, kind of a filling last minute room sort of thing, a hotel tonight thing. And there's that conversation happening there, too, because you essentially, if you're in a city, you would get to, crash in someone's guest room or something like that. But that, fear of, concerns around racial discrimination potentially occurring is really a big, strong narrative happening around there too. So that will be interesting to keep watching. Well, we will keep looking to you for more information on this as these stories continue to unfold. So thanks so much for being with us.
Yeah, thank you. I had a great time. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, you too. All right, my friends, we're going to take a little break, and when we come back, more of this fun here on 720 WGN. WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for spending part of your Saturday with us. I'm quite grateful to you for that. My friends, we were just talking about Airbnb, which I think is such an interesting service. If you've never used one, it is essentially the idea of, instead of going to a city and staying in a hotel, you would essentially rent an apartment or a guest room or a house or something like that from someone who lives there. And I've used this service, and I think it's really interesting, and I've had access to neighborhoods that I wouldn't otherwise have access to. I used an Airbnb, in fact, just a couple of months ago when I was in South Africa, and I stayed in the home of an American expat journalist, which was kind of cool and something I didn't realize till I got there. And now I'm good friends with that person. So I think it's a really enriching conversation, or an enriching experience rather. And certainly you have to be mindful of your safety and tell someone where you're going and all that, because there are creeps out there. But for the most part, I've had an extremely positive experience, as has everybody. Griffin, have you ever used an Airbnb?
I just used it for the first time like a month ago in Milwaukee, so not quite as exciting as a South Africa trip, but
says you.
Well, it was pretty exciting, I have to say.
And was it nice? Did you have a positive
experience?
It was a good
experience. Yeah, there was a moment in the middle of the night where I woke up and I thought, I don't know this person at all.
This person can be a
nice
homicidal
profile.
Maniac.
They had a really good profile picture, but other than that, I have no information. But then that kind of wears off because there's ways of tracking. They know where I am and stuff. I feel like there was some safety there, but I did have a moment of a little bit of a freak out.
Well, I know a couple of people that have used Airbnb as a host just to kind of offset their rent, or they travel a lot and it seems wasteful to just have the apartment sitting empty. And they've done some interesting things, because the question I always have for them is, how do you prevent someone from going through your stuff? Because that's what I would be like, how do I know you didn't borrow my clothes while I was gone? So what someone I know does is they use zip ties, and they just kind of like close off their closet doors, and then they zip tie their, you know, bathroom cabinets. And then they put out like guest soaps and little travel size shampoo and stuff like that. So they're being accommodating and helpful without saying, here, please use my fancy shampoo or wear my clothes.
Yeah, whatever. That's like a really good. That's like a hotel, basically, at that point. Right. Might as well be. Yeah.
Right.
I have been an Airbnb host.
You have been a host.
A couple of times. So I didn't do a zip. That's a good idea. I wish I thought.
Do you feel like people went through your stuff?
They played all my harmonicas, I'm sure.
They were
No, I don't
close.
Think so. I didn't. The only thing, and this was not bad, was I did it during Riot Fest. And so it was a group of 20-somethings. You know, people Griffin's age. Very conscientious.
And we all know Griffin is a big thug.
Yeah, a very conscientious generation. But so it last year on Riot Fest, it rained a lot. And so they had the woman. I didn't go through the garbage, but I was taking out the garbage, and they had just. They hadn't used a can, you know, can liner, and the woman had thrown out her shoes in my kitchen garbage. So it was just this pair of shoes that were completely caked in mud.
Ew.
And that's not the worst thing.
I was going to say, it could have been a syringe.
Could have been way worse.
Like, it could have been way worse.
Then they left things in the fridge, actually, like Pabst beer, because 20-somethings drink that. So that took me a long time to go through. Because I don't drink that beer often. I don't like it. But if I really want it.
With the PBR.
So they left the PBR in the fridge. What else?
So far, this is not that terrible.
No, when you start the story with it was Riot Fest and it had been raining,
Could have been way worse.
The worst thing is they put garbage in the garbage.
Their rating for me was highly positive, but I didn't tell them about the bathtub drain. They said it drained really slow. And I'm like, well, I just live alone, so it's not a big deal. But yeah, three people try to take a shower.
Oh, sure.
You might back it up a little. But sure. I had never thought of that.
I mean, I think it's interesting. I would do it. I would rent out my place. I think it's the logistics kind of unhinge me. Like, how do I get the key to you? How do you get the key back to me?
We always met in person. Like, you know, we just they don't know your address until they, like, show up, basically. Or they know basically where you live, neighborhood-wise, and maybe intersection. And then you prearrange. But the people I've had have been very nice.
Yeah.
And one of them, I had to do that with my dog. I had to drop him off, you know, and there was a logistic thing. I'm going to put him in the crate for a little bit. Is that sure? That's fine. So it's been easy.
I want to do an investigative report and use your Airbnb and, you know, is Bob Kessler the good Airbnb host he says he is?
Dun, dun, dun.
Or is there more there?
What
next
is he
week on
not
the Wintrust Business. Exactly.
Right. Go investigative on this.
This is Hall of Fame, Walk of Fame type programming.
Sure, it sure is. Whatever gets us there, my friends, whatever gets us there. Well, I mean, I think it's interesting. And I also, you know, earlier when we had Bettina Chang from Chicago Magazine on the air, I mentioned this new service. It's on TechCrunch right now today. It's called Overnight, which is the same idea, but it's just for a quick overnight stay. Like if you know, say you miss a flight or you just decide on a whim to go to another city or you decide to stay an extra day or something like that. You can just say, I need a place to stay. I need a place to crash tonight. I think it's kind of the idea of like couchsurfing.org, but a little nicer. So someone would essentially rent out their guest room or be willing to be flexible and do a last minute, a last minute rental share in a city, which I think that's pretty interesting too.
It sounds okay. It seems like we're getting more and more non-committal as a species. Like I thought that's what Airbnb was, but now Airbnb is too... there's too much stricture there, so we have to make it even more flighty.
Right. Too much commitment.
Yeah, fair.
Booking an Airbnb 2 days in advance. I got to just wing it that
I have another Airbnb story. My friend, former bandmate, spent the summer in Rome, and so he rented out his place to a family, and then he came back to his place and he found a tooth.
Oh, well, what is that? I feel like there's a book here or something.
Yeah.
I feel like you have good Airbnb stories that you have been holding out on us for. I see. Well, my friends, that about does it for the Wintrust Business Lunch. We are going to wrap things up and get you turned over to King John, but we'll see you back here next week. But we'll do that here in just a bit. We'll take a little break on 720 WGN.